This Second Childhood production is for the Killer Bees podcast and I mix what I like.org. All right, joining the show once again, part of the Killer Bees squad, Dr. Hate is back in the building, fresh off a conference.
Dr. Hate is in the building.
Fresh off a conference dedicated to the late Dr. Bobby Wright. Tell us, Dr. Hate, why is Dr. Wright so important in 2013, and what else can you tell us about the conference you just attended?
Well, the conference was down at Florida A&M University. It's sponsored by the psychology department at FAMU. And Dr. Huberta Jackson-Lohman was the chair of the conference and former chair of the psychology department. And the psychology department is really an African-centered psychology department based on the work of Dr. Kobe Cambone. About 4 years ago, they held the first annual African Black Psychology Conference in November. And what they do is they focus on one African psychologist's work. So the first year was Kobe Cambone himself. That was like his retirement party. The second year was Amos Wilson. I was down there for that one too. The late Amos Wilson, the great Amos Wilson, no stranger to Pacifica's Airways. And then the third year was Dr. Naeem Akbar. And this year was Bobby Wright. Bobby Wright is important. Mainly because he, from what I gather, was the dean of radical black African psychologists. He's part of that Chicago crew that developed the Communiversity with folks that we know, like Tom Porter's people, Robert Rhodes, Baba Hannibal Afrique, and a number of different scholars that came together and would develop community education. So they took whatever they gathered from University of Chicago, developing their own black theories, and created a community university they call the Communiversity. One of the highlights there for me at the conference this weekend was that Baba Obadeli Larry Williams was down there. And he's one of them old swingers who ran with all of those cats, and Nana Asa Hilliard, Baba Hannibal Afrique, Nana John Henry Clark, and of course Bobby Wright. So Baba Obadeli was talking about the work that Bobby Wright did in organizing teachers in the Chicago teacher strike in the late 60s, and then also developing some of his critical work around the Garfield Comprehensive Mental Health Center that still exists, that developed in the late 70s, since he took it over in the late 70s, and it still exists. And it was important because it was the only black-run mental health center in the country, right? So at the time, black folks staffed it and black folks ran it. Black folks were the psychologists, black folks were the psychiatrists, and it was also funded by black people. So Bobby Wright was an institution builder in that sense. And one of the ways that we know of him is by his work on the psychopathic racial personality. And in that book and a number of other speeches, he talks about the need for a black social theory, something that explains the relationships between blacks and all other people, defines our cultural values and where we're going in life, and the kinds of goals that we set for African people. And then, you know, how do we deal with certain processes that we face? So how do we deal with enemies? How do we deal with folks who are internally colonized, which he called menticide? And he looked at menticide as the systemic and deliberate destruction of a group's mind. So he was really building on this idea that there is a national and international destruction of black people's mind. And that radical position seems like it's a very basic understanding today, but at the time in the 60s, 70s, and he died in 82, was a radical position to take because a lot of people didn't want to deal with this reality that there is a war against African people. And so Bobby Wright, in a number of different ways, is a Pan-African psychologist, was also at the 6th Pan-African Congress in Tanzania, was co-chair of the Science and Policy committee, and aside from being a teacher, a psychologist, an activist, he was also one of the teachers of folks like Fred Hampton and Bobby Sutton, according to Baba Odedele.
Yeah, I was just listening to a speech recently where he talked about that he had worked with Fred Hampton, that Fred Hampton was one of the young people that came out of some organized effort that Dr. Wright was a part of, which I did not know. I had never heard that before. You know, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, this is a man who came out of an all-black city in Alabama that apparently is his grandfather, great-grandfather, founded. And, you know, nurtured in that kind of black environment, he had a clear understanding of what it looks like for black people to be in control of their institutions. And then stepping out of that and dealing with white psychological theory, he then realizes that anytime that black people aren't in control of the institutions, we are then enslaved, not just imprisoned or in trouble, but enslaved, because it's the institutions that control the well-being of any group that's dependent upon the institutions. And that one piece, that psychopathic racial personality that a lot of folks may know, is published by Hakeem Adabudi's African World Press.
Third World.
Hakeem Adabudi did Third World Press. If I said African World Press, I apologize.
Yeah.
So it comes out of Third World Press, and people were pressing Bobby Wright to give them something, right, so that we have some legacy to remember people by. But it's interesting to think about it from the perspective that here was a man who was so busy in building institutions and doing the actual work, he didn't have time to stop and write. He was much more focused on other things. And in the psychopathic racial personality, he essentially describes all whites as psychopaths and runs down a list of the diagnostic and statistical manuals, categories, and descriptions for psychopaths. And, you know, in a nutshell, it is a person or group of people in this case who feel no remorse or empathy or guilt for their actions, and their actions never follow their own rules. Now, if we could look at the rhetoric of democracy and these different banners that Bobby Wright would say that people hold up, and talking about a free society, he would look at each one of these and say that none of these actions are actually taking place across the white world, and that white people don't follow their own rules. So if we were to look at it, Bobby Wright was essentially saying that the rulers, the white ruling class, and the whites themselves are psychopathic by virtue of not being able to follow their own rules, which, again, is a fascinating way of looking at it. And a number of people have followed up on that work. So when you look at Francis Cress Welsing's work, you can see similarities there. Obviously, if you look at Naeem Akbar's work, you can see some similarities there in terms of the effects of the psychopaths on African people. So Bobby Wright, as far as we know, is like somebody whose lane we've been driving in, especially for us African psychologists, myself, Sean Utsiotis Williams. We've been trying to figure out, you know, what is missing in the world of black psychology, and it's really the work of Bobby Wright. Now, we know some of this because I organized a panel in 2010 at the Association of Black Psychologists Conference, which was in Chicago. And since we were in Chicago, we did a tribute to Bobby Wright, and we brought back, I think, about 12 folks who were affiliated with his work in different aspects. So there was one aspect of Bobby Wright that we haven't touched upon yet, that he was a Garveyite. And he was one of the people that led the group of Chicago with folks like Jake Carruthers, and that whole Comedic Institute out there to get connected to Garvey and then re-update people's connection to Garvey. So in that, the Garveyite movement in Chicago with people like Anderson Thompson, Jay Carruthers, all in the Comedic Institute folks, reconnects through some of the work that Bobby Wright is doing. And I think that is where the conference had a really strong representation on both Bobby Wright as a Garveyite and then what does it mean to be a Garveyite UNIA member. And we heard some of the ideas come out around those movements Garvey and Garveyism from none other than Mama Limba Ani, who did a strong presentation on bringing Garvey's work alive and talking about the comprehensive nature of how the UNIA actually met the criteria for a social theory, but it also set an agenda, had an economic system attached to it, and then it extended beyond the dimensions of any one nation. So it wasn't just rooted in the U.S., but it's an international phenomenon and one of the largest organizations, mass organizations for African people worldwide.
And if I could just interrupt very quickly, just to quickly remind people that they're probably either listening to this on the Mighty Super Funky Soul Power Hour on WPFW 89.3 FM or at imixwhatilike.org, where they will soon come be able to hear Dr. Ani's presentation that you were just talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. When the conference is happening, man, you're in the mix and listening to a bunch of stuff, and then you're realizing there are a lot of people who, because of where Tallahassee is, cannot get to Tallahassee with any ease. It is a challenging place to get to. So if you're going to have an African psychological maroon stronghold, they have found the perfect place for it to be. They are well protected by outside of being able to enter that space. But that said, you know, thinking about Bobby Wright as a Garveyite, he was probably the first psychologist taking seriously the work of Garvey. And of course, we see Amos Wilson follow that up later on with his Blueprints of Black Power and the precursor to that book, which actually deals with African psychology and Marcus Garvey and the UNIA in a real studied sense. So Bobby Wright, in a number of senses, is, you know, somebody that we can look at as a multidisciplinary genius, but I don't want to just leave it at the idea of a genius, that he's smarter than everybody, so what he did can't be done. He was organizing with every group possible. So groups that didn't seem to have any ideological consistency, like the NAACP, and then some of the other black organizations, the nationalist organizations that he was working with, he was in all of them. And I get the sense that he was in all of them to give them a radical agenda and make them accountable to every black agenda that should be on the table. And my brother, Derive Jamison, is over at University of Alabama now in the African-American Studies Department, really try to bring that point out that Bobby Wright had this idea that there shouldn't be anything removed from the table of discussion, nothing so sacred that it can't be discussed for black people. But in that, he was just willing to take a conversation and some ideas to the next level and put them under scrutiny in a scientific sense. So brilliant man, brilliant work. And for me personally, as an African psychologist, like I said, man, I feel like my crew, Fanon Project, well, obviously you included, and other folks in the Fanon Project have been trying to figure out what is it about Bobby Wright that was so radical that we can't find in today's psychology movements, whether it be in the Association of Black Psychologists. And other folks striving to get there.
Again, forgive the interruption, but you know, one of the things that, I mean, you were saying earlier that his ideas may have been radical in the 60s and 70s, and I almost thought I heard you saying that they're not so radical now, and I'm not sure I see that. I mean, it seems like that today these ideas are as radical or as unfamiliar or unorthodox as ever. Is that, did I hear you right? Or I mean, you know,
Yeah, I guess you can hear me thinking about it. Like, you know, so we didn't necessarily use Bobby Wright to arrive at the same conclusions. Mm-hmm. Right. So in thinking about the work, you know, when Bobby Wright is looking around and seeing in Chicago specifically, you know, the black political capital of the U.S., he's seeing the Nation of Islam, and he's seeing Operation Breadbasket and Jesse Jackson, and he's seeing Blackstone Rangers become El Rukin under the work of Jeff Fort. And Blackstone Rangers is a gang, but they're a gang that could be politicized under the ideas that Bobby Wright's you know, one seminal statement in talking about black-on-black violence. He posed this idea that blacks shoot blacks because blacks haven't been trained to kill whites, which is saying that if people aren't organized politically, their aims will eventually turn in on themselves, because that is what a psychopathic white racial personality designs for black people. So that idea could seem really radical, but it just seems to be so common sense. It's just scary for people to think about. Scary for people to think about. So I think in those senses, you know, that he developed these ideas nearly 30 years ago, it should be, you know, commonplace now. But yeah, I can buy that, as you say. They still remain radical today. Now, the beauty of it is I can't imagine what he would be on today, because Baba Overdeli would talk about that Bobby Wright was studying war. And he's saying that if we're at war, we need to know the enemies that we're at war against, right? So that idea was really clear in the sense that Bobby Wright had a room where the data on what the war looked like from Europeans and the state of the U.S. against African people in the U.S. Would be. So in that sense, Bobby Wright was trying to make sense of how this war acts against African people, and was documenting all the different ways that Europeans are gathering institutes and institutions and studying this stuff, right? Statistically, making sense of, you know, what projects are going on against African people. So if people have ever heard about the King Alfred Plan, that actually comes, that idea got spread through the Topographical Research Center, which was one of the research institutes that Bobby Wright was working with. And these are the folks who had documented that there is a planned response for any black outbreak of violence by the U.S., or any black outbreak of violence in the U.S., and the state itself would collapse black people into detention camps through arrests, and then essentially look to exterminate black people. And those ideas sound crazy. You know, when people hear about the King Alfred Plan, and that, you know, was a wonderful Gil Scott Heron song called the King Alfred Plan, but they might sound crazy until you look at some of the examples where black people actually have been interned and encamped. And it's kind of scary when you think about it, but the cold reality that sets in, because we've seen it in the 1921 Tulsa race riot, in which black people were actually put in concentration camps and only allowed out when they could be vouched for or verified by their white employers, for the folks who were domestics. And why were they let out? Because they had to go to work. Somebody had to clean up white people's houses. And so the only way they were able to get out was through organizing, obviously, eventually to get out. But otherwise, white people were letting them out. And then the second place we've seen it, and just talking about this in a class, was through Hurricane Katrina displacement. So people were taken to essentially military bases, and I know because I was working at one of them as an intern in psychology, where people were brought out to Cape Cod and essentially placed at, I think it's Otis Air Force Base, which was a defunct military base. But when they arrived, they're greeted by military police. And when you think about that kind of greeting, after being told 2 hours in the air where you're actually being taken from, going from Louisiana, and not knowing where you're going, 2 hours you find out you're going to be taken to Massachusetts, and then when you arrive at a military base. So these ideas seem far-fetched at the time, but if you actually start applying some of this stuff, you see it. And then, of course, we have the mass imprisonment, mass incarceration of African people that I'm not sure if the Topographical Research Center saw this factor and trend coming, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did. So they had a research group that was really studying the effects of war, and I liken that to the Fanon Project folks, who are trying to tie together all of these different industrial complexes and how they work together to support power for the white state and make sure that power will never be equalized amongst African people or given leverage amongst African people. So that idea of gaining control over the institutions that rule black people, we need to be about that work. It couldn't be any more clear through Bobby Wright's work.
Well, Dr. Haight, unfortunately, we are going to have to draw this conversation to a close. I want to thank you again for sharing this bit of history and this bit of work and perspective with us as usual. And we'll look to catch you in the whirlwind in the not too distant future with some more discussion and work. You know, we appreciate you. Thank you again.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
I mix what I like.
This Second Childhood production is for the Killer Bees podcast and I mix what I like.org.